Chapter 54. "Surface!" shouted Dick Condon, the first mate who Isa O'Shea had put in command of his Holland submarine when he murdered Captain Hatch.
"No!"
O'Shea countermanded the order. "Stay down. They'll see us."
"The tide is killing us," the frightened Irish rebel shouted back. "The current is running 4 knots. We only make 6 knots on electric. We have to surface to use the gasoline engine."
O'Shea gripped Condon's shoulder. The panic in his man's voice was scaring the men who were operating the ballasting and trimming tanks and preparing to fire the torpedo, which was precisely why he had decided to sail with the submarine. Someone had to keep a clear head.
6? 4? Who cares? We're 2 knots faster.
No, Mr. O'Shea. Only directly into the tide. When I turn broadside to line up a torpedo, we'll be swept away.
Try it, O'Shea demanded. Take the chance.
Dick Condon switched the vertical rudder to hand control from the less fine compressed air steering and moved it cautiously. The deck tilted under their feet. Then the East River caught the 100-foot submarine with the fury of a shark tearing into a weak swimmer. The men in the small dark space smashed into pipes, conduits, valves, and air hoses as the boat was tumbled.
"Surface!"
Condon's voice rose to a scream.
"No! I must put the conning tower in the air, sir."
"It doesn't matter, Mr. O'Shea," he pleaded. "We can shoot better on the surface. The first torpedo is already loaded. We can fire, submerge, let the current sweep us down again while we reload and return on the surface. You'll get what you want, sir. And if anyone sees us, they'll see it's a British ship, just like we want."
"Please, sir, you must listen to reason or all is lost."
O'Shea shoved him from the periscope and looked for himself. The river surface was wild, an ever-moving, crazy quilt of tumbling waves. Spray obscured the glass. Just as it cleared, a wave curled over it, blacking it out. The boat lurched violently. Suddenly, the periscope stood free of the jumbled water, and O'Shea saw that they were nearly abreast of the Navy Yard. Water blackened the view again. Then, just as suddenly, he could see clearly. The New Hampshire was just where he wanted it. He could not have positioned the long white hull better himself. But the submarine was slipping backward, even though the propeller was thrashing and the electric motor smelled like it was burning up.
"All right," O'Shea conceded. "Attack on the surface." "Reduce to half speed," Condon ordered.
The motor stopped straining and the boat stopped shaking. He watched through the periscope, controlling their drift with skillful twists of the horizontal and vertical rudders.
"Prepare to surface." "What's that noise?"
The Royal Navy veterans exchanged puzzled glances.
"Is something wrong with the motor?" asked O'Shea.
"No, no, no. It's in the water."
The crew stood still, ears cocked to a strange, high-pitched whine that grew louder and shriller by the second.
"A ship?"
Condon spun the periscope, searching the river. The engineer voiced what his shipmates were thinking.
"It doesn't sound like any ship I ever heard."
"Down!"
Condon shouted.
"Take her down!"
"Where did he go?"
Lowell Falconer gasped. To Isaac Bell's astonishment, the bloodied Navy captain had dragged himself topside where Bell was driving dynamite toward the Brooklyn Bridge at 30 knots. "Dead ahead," said Isaac Bell. He had one hand on the steam lever, the other gripped the helm. "Is that tourniquet doing its job?" he asked, not taking his eyes from the river.
"I'd be dead if it weren't," Falconer snapped through gritted teeth.
He was white from loss of blood, and Bell doubted he would be conscious much longer. The effort to climb the few steps to the bridge must have been Herculean.
"Who's in the engine room?"
Falconer asked. "Uncle Darby claims he was coal stoker on the Staten Island ferry, and assistant engineer when the regular fellow got drunk."
"Dynamite burns oil."
"He figured that out when he couldn't find a shovel. We've got plenty of steam."
"I don't see the Holland."
"It's gone up and down. I saw the periscope a moment ago."
"There!"
The stubby conning tower broke the surface. The hull itself emerged briefly and rolled back under.
"Tide's battering him," muttered Falconer. "It's ebbing under a full moon."
"Good," said Bell. "We need all the help we can get." Dyname streaked through the patch of roiled water. The submarine was nowhere to be seen. Falconer tugged at Bell's sleeve, whispering urgently,
"He's some sort of A-class Royal Navy, Holland. Triple our tonnage. Look out if he surfaces. He'll be faster on his main engine."
With that warning, the captain slid unconscious to the deck. Bell throttled back and turned the speeding yacht around until it was pointing upstream again. He was several hundred yards beyond the Brooklyn Bridge now, scanning the water in the failing light. A ferryboat pulled abruptly from its Pine Street pier, cut off a big Bronx-bound Pennsylvania Railroad ferry, and raced up the East River. Their wakes combined to render vast stretches of water too choppy for Bell to distinguish the periscope from breaking seas. He drove into the chop and circled. Suddenly he saw it far ahead. It had trailed behind the ferries, masked by them, and was pulling abreast of the Navy Yard. The Holland submarine burst from the water, revealing her conning tower and the full 100 feet of her hull. Blue smoke spewed. Gasoline exhaust, Bell realized, from her powerful main engine. On the surface now, she was a full-fledged torpedo boat, quick and nimble, but vulnerable. Bell shoved the steam lever forward, seizing this precious chance to ram her. But even as the steel yacht gathered speed, the long Holland heeled into a tight turn and pointed straight at Dyname. Her bow reared. Bell saw the dark maw of an open bow tube. From it leaped a Mark 14 Wheeler torpedo.